Welcome to the Teacher Rockstar Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Hiles, and in today's episode, we're going to be discussing what new teachers get wrong about student engagement with our guest, Danielle Pernot. But before we begin with our topic here today, I'd like to share just a little bit about our guest today. Danielle Pernot is an instructor and FFA advisor at Monroe High School in Monroe, Wisconsin, who is very passionate about helping students grow through hands-on learning and leadership opportunities. She is committed to fostering a supportive environment where students can build confidence, develop practical skills, and achieve success both inside and outside of the classroom. I want to welcome you to the show, Danielle.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be
All
here.
All right. All right. Would you like to take a moment and share your educational experience with our audience here?
Sure. So I started an undergraduate career at the University of Wisconsin-Platteville, where I dual licensed in agriculture education and technology education. I got my first teaching job right out of high school in 2014, or right out of college in 2014, at the school district of Janesville, which is the ninth largest school district in the state of Wisconsin. I taught there for 2 years before moving to Monroe and have been there since 2014. During the last 10 years there, I did complete my master's in agriculture education from UW River Falls and graduated in 2020 with that master's. I really focus a lot on student engagement and running an efficient classroom, using hands-on activities and priding myself in making connections with kids. And it's been a really successful program and a really way to build relationships with students.
All right. Outstanding. Well, let me begin by asking you this here, Danielle. A lot of new teachers struggle to keep students genuinely engaged once the first week of excitement wears off, right? But from your experience with hands-on learning and FFA leadership, what are some practical ways teachers can create classrooms where students actually want to participate?
I think one of the great things about learning is to provide students with that why. So why are we learning this particular activity, or why are we learning this particular concept? And once you give the students the why and you've made that real world connection, it tends to provide students with that interest to go ahead and investigate it. From there, a lot of the activities that I've built into the curriculum have kind of like challenge questions to them. We actually start with challenge questions on day number one. And it might be something that's super simple. Like for my freshmen, I ask them if double stuffed Oreos are really double stuffed, and then provide them with kind of an inquiry opportunity where they get to take double stuffed Oreos and a traditional Oreo, and then do an inquiry activity to figure out if that is true or not. And then they have to be able to support it. And by the end of the trimester, those same freshmen are getting an activity where they are soda drink manufacturers and using concentrations of citric acid solution to learn about how nutrients can differentiate between plants and animals. And their goal is they make a dilution of citric acid, which is naturally found in lemon juice and things like that. And they taste different concentrations. And then by the end of it, are telling me if they were making a soda drink or some type of new drink, what concentration they would use and why. And it's all part of building this inquiry experience that increases engagement through hands-on learning.
You know, that is so interesting. Are Oreo cookies double stuffed?
No, not at all.
Oh, that is so cool. Well, this leads me to this next thing I want to talk to you about. Many first-year teachers think classroom management is solely about consequences and control. Have you found that student leadership, and ownership can actually reduce behavior problems in your class?
Yeah, 100%. There's a couple of things that I've learned during my education experience. And one of the things that I've learned is you actually gain a lot more control by giving all of the control away. For instance, at the end of every activity, I might have a series of conclusion questions that students are expected to answer and provide evidence from the activity of how they learned it. One of the things that I might do is give them a series of four questions and tell them to pick two to answer. So by giving them the choice of, well, which two do you want to answer? It provides some of that ownership, which then makes sure that the students kind of follow through. And then one of the other things that's been really beneficial is during my master's degree, I read the Teaching with Love and Logic, which I thought was wonderful. It had a lot of really great practical experience style questions and a lot of information about what you could try for a student. So one of the things I took away is like having a little bit of empathy, offering choice. While it sounds funny, the classroom management is a lot like raising a toddler. Managing students is a lot about kind of offering choice and consequences that fit any of those behavior actions. Like something as simple as, you know, a student throwing a piece of trash away, but like trying to shoot it like a basketball player. I often offer, if you're going to make a mess for my custodian, you can come in and help my custodian clean up the room after school. The students who make messes, I see them at 3:30 every day. And just saying something as simple as that, they oftentimes go, well, I'm going to clean it up right now so I don't have to come in. And it's like, that's my choice. Right. I appreciate that. But really just simple stuff that stay consistent. And those behavior problems kind of just reduce and melt away as you turn those students into the leaders of the classroom.
Well, that's really awesome. Very beautiful, actually. I have to ask you this, Danielle. Now, have you seen disruptive or difficult students respond positively to the method here?
Yeah, 100%. There are going to be those difficult and challenging students that you kind of have to remind again and again and again. One of the things that I often say is, well, do it for me. Because once you've formed that relationship with the kids, they don't care about their grade, but like they don't want to disappoint a teacher that believes in them and trusts them. A lot of times I'll say, well, just do this one for me. I don't necessarily sit and harp on them like, well, you haven't typed any words. I'll do something like, hey, I come back in like 2 minutes. I expect you to have your claim stated and then I'll help you provide some evidence for it. And then I do. I come back and return in 2 minutes. And it's often this is really unfortunate. You chose not to do that. So the times for me to help you with that are during lunch if you'd like, or before or after school. What's your choice? Or kind of turning it more on them to make that decision. And eventually, once they learn that the punishment for not doing their work or not following through is to follow through and do their work, they'll do it a lot sooner the first time.
Absolutely. Wonderful, wonderful. Let me ask you this. Some students walk into class already believing that, you know, they're not smart or that school just isn't for them. How can new teachers, okay, help build confidence in students who may not see their own potential yet?
So one of the things that I always do is start the first unit with something that really is super simple. For example, I have an intro to ag class, and our entire first unit is about what are the three basic human needs: food, shelter, and clothing. And the idea is that in that unit, we learn how agriculture has impacted those three things. And it's really kind of juvenile and it's really simple. It's seventh grade, sixth grade material, but I'm teaching that to freshmen. Sometimes what I've found is some of the freshmen who walk in my classroom can't read. They're slightly illiterate. And it's really challenging because they truly believe that they're just not smart. And one of the things that I do is we spend the entire first unit really learning how to do school and how to do the classroom routines. And it's not so much about content, but because we do really engaging activities, they remember the content. So then later on when they're like, well, I can't do this or I'm not smart enough for this, I'll say, what are the three basic human needs? And they'll go food, shelter, and clothing. And I'm like, yeah, You remember that from when we did it 8 weeks ago. Like, you are so smart. You learned. And I kind of proved to them that, well, maybe it's their avenue is different or their route is different, or even maybe some of the questions I ask of them is different. I proved to them over and over again that they really are smart and that they really can do this. I also do a lot of self-assessment and reflection. So we build on the skills that they do have and then work towards learning. The goal is really that we're creating an environment of learning, not an environment where everybody gets 100%. Yeah. And if we just were able to take those students and give them a grade based upon how much they learned in the classroom, it probably would be significantly different than the grade that they end up achieving.
Absolutely.
The Teacher Rockstar Academy course is meticulously designed to equip you with the tools and strategies needed to skyrocket your effectiveness as a teacher. Curious to know if the Teacher Rockstar Academy course is the missing piece in your teaching journey? If you're ready to reclaim control of your classroom and witness the incredible impact on your students, then use the link in the podcast description to learn more about this program.
Well, let me ask you this, Danielle. New teachers often feel pressure to have everything perfect right away. Now, looking back, what's something you wish more early career teachers understood about building relationships and trust with students over time? I feel you value establishing relationships from the jump with your kids. What is your sense on that?
Absolutely. One of the things that is really part of our district motto is about using a PLC, a professional learning communities, and kind of understanding that these are all of our kids and we want all of our kids to learn. Part of the difficult part in my position is I'm a department of one. So I don't have a team to bounce ideas off of and to rewrite curriculum and to kind of do things differently with. And one of the things I wish I would have learned early on is that my team are the 26 kids who are sitting in that classroom. And my team are really the group of students who are in front of me that know that I care so much that I'm willing to make changes. So there's a particular activity that I do with my students where they learn about a foodborne illness. And the activity is supposed to foster kind of some group collaboration about where contaminated food could come from. It's in kind of an upper level, mid-level science class. I teach it mostly to 10th graders, but it's the idea of like biological control and understanding organisms and how they interact with the environment and a little bit about food safety. And the activity tends to have really great ideas that the students have in small groups, but then when they get into larger groups, they don't necessarily want to share them as well. So what we ended up doing is we rewrote the activity to be more of like a CSI, a crime scene investigation, where we used some AI and they came up with some cool pictures from like our back receiving room and what our, you know, contamination could look like in our food service areas and stuff like that. And I had the students actually do it with me. So we finished the activity and they were kind of like, it was fine, but it wasn't as engaging as some of the other things. And then I said, well, then help me understand how we could make it so. So using them as my team and to rewrite it and to reevaluate it has been absolutely life-changing. And I do that with them almost every single unit. And what's cool is as you continue to build that relationship and want to make change, the students will actually say, hey, so in that unit, we had those essential questions. I think really 2 and 3 could be combined into 1. What do you think it looked like this? What's great about that is we're teaching them problem-solving skills that will help when they end up in a career because they're not going to come to their boss with a problem. They're going to come to their boss with a solution for the problem, which is really what we care about. So I wish I would have kind of jumped on that bandwagon much earlier in my teaching career and figured that out at a much earlier spot, that the students are part of my collaborative community because it's so effective.
I think that is really great, Danielle. I really do. Let me ask you, hands-on learning sounds great in theory, but you know, there are many new teachers worry about losing control of the class and everything going awry and becoming very chaotic. Well, what advice would you give these teachers okay, to make learning more interactive, but are nervous about managing it effectively.
It absolutely is a challenge. One of the things that I kind of keep in my back pocket is all about how you're going to front load it. If you have a class that is more challenging, keeping them working individually and giving them small steps with checkpoints throughout the activity or the lab is going to be way more beneficial than just throwing the entire thing at them. So while it's really nice to kind of just let the group loose, there are times when a hands-on activity can get a little bit out of hand or a little bit kind of daunting if you just do it all at once. One of the things that I do is a taxidermy unit. So we fillet fish and then fill them and then paint them. And they have to kind of meet the tasks in a set schedule in order to move on to the next thing. And the goal is that once you're done, you're not allowed just to kind of have a free-for-all. If you're done, then you need to check your learning by helping another student. And we need to make sure that all students finish the filleting process at the end of day two, so that way they can dry over the weekend. So on Monday, day three, we can go ahead and fill the fish. It's all about kind of having some controlled chaos. Well, it can look a little overwhelming at times, and there's a lot of moving parts. Setting up that structure and being really clear about those expectations ahead of time tends to be one of the most beneficial things about how to manage a hands-on learning environment effectively. And then making sure that students know and understand all of the safety protocol. So not only do they know what the safety protocol is, but if they need to help and assist in it, make sure that they're confident as to what they should do. One of the things there is, like, I teach my students that it's okay to use the emergency call button to get a hold of the office. It's okay to use my classroom phone and pick it up and dial the numbers that are on that screen to get a hold of somebody in case we would have an emergency and need some help. And part of that is that whole thing about giving some of the power to the students, and they take some of that responsibility of the learning environment. It's really been something that has been beneficial. And once you trust your students, you really can set them free on some pretty incredible adventures and just let them kind of enjoy the learning. And what you'll find is they'll come back and ask the questions and they'll come back and be the inquisitive kids who want to know why something happens or why it didn't work.
All right. Well, let me ask you one final thing. How much AI do you incorporate into your lessons, or do you know? I'm just kind of curious.
Yeah, so I would say it's kind of hit and miss. There are times when AI is absolutely beneficial, but I do like to show students how it is completely inaccurate. So one of the things that we often do is I show them, like, on their conclusion questions in their activity, if they ask AI for an answer, that it's not going to give them an answer that they need to support their learning in class, that it's actually going to be wrong because AI is not taking the ag class, so it didn't learn any of it.
Right.
Like, one of the things, I teach a small animal care class, and we talk about domestication of species. And if you look and learn through the curriculum and you ask, or I ask students, what was the first animal to be domesticated, they should tell me about how a wolf transitioned into a dog. But if you ask AI, it's going to tell you a dog, a goat, and a sheep, because AI isn't in the class. It doesn't know that in small animal care, we didn't talk about goats and sheep. So it's one of the things that I like to point out to them, that sometimes the context really matters.
Yes, it does.
One of the things that we will use AI for, and that, you know, I absolutely think is beneficial, is to change writing we already have. So if we need to shorten characters, or if we need to pull someone else's, like when we do peer evaluations, pull someone else's writing into AI and ask it if it can find the claim or if it can find two pieces of evidence, because that's a much more beneficial way to utilize it. I also like to use it to kind of get some brainstorming going, because that's where AI can excel. I do like to show students that some of those negative repercussions about using AI is that sometimes the work isn't necessarily correct,
right,
and that it can be easily seen on a teacher's end. where students are using it, and what those repercussions are about turning in work that's not genuinely theirs.
Right, right. Okay, Danielle, what is your biggest takeaway that you would like to share with our audience today?
I think the biggest thing is be vulnerable in whatever you do. So I've changed curriculum. I teach 14 different classes. I have 300 students every year, and I'm vulnerable with all of them. If there's something that I've never done before or that I need some help with or something that maybe I'm not so comfortable with, I'll admit it to them. And while it's a little bit challenging, it's one of those things that has opened up those relationships and those doors. And then just be a valued person in their team. It's not an environment in the classroom where it's you versus them. It's you and them and their learning. So it's kind of all of that stuff together about showing them that, it's not you versus the teacher. It's not the student versus the other students. It's a collaborative environment that's focused on learning.
Okay, thank you. And how can folks get in contact with you, Danielle?
Yeah, my best contact is my school email. It's Danielle, D-A-N-I-E-L-L-E, Pernot, P-E-R-N-O-T, at Monroe, M-O-N-R-O-E, .k12.wi.us.
Okay, great. We'll also have that in the show notes as well. Okay, great. Danielle, I want to thank you so much for you taking time out of your schedule to come on the show here and share with our audience your expertise. I know new educators will get a wealth of knowledge here. And again, thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, we have come to the end of today's episode. I want to thank you listening to the Teacher Rockstar Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Hiles, and we will see you same time, same place next week. And remember, my friend, you got this.
You've been listening to the Teacher Rockstar Podcast with your host, Steve Hiles. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast as much as we have. Make sure to hit that subscribe button and join our ever-growing community of teacher rockstars. Until then, thanks for listening.